Welcome to Woke History. I'm your host, Dr. Joshua K. Wright. I'm a college history professor in Washington, D.C. Woke History is a new podcast series that features lively conversations with guests focusing on historical and contemporary issues of race, gender, political activism, and culture that are often ignored in most high school classrooms and social studies textbooks. Guests will include a wide range of individuals from scholars and community activists to professional athletes, media personalities, and others. Today's guest is Bob Sumner, who is best known as the co-creator of HBO's Def Comedy Jam. With over 25 years of experience, Sumner has either introduced or reintroduced the world to many comedic legends, including Bernie Mac, Dave Chappelle, Steve Harvey, Martin Lawrence, Chris Rock, Tiffany Haddish, and Kevin Hart. Between 1992 and 1997, and later in the mid-2000s, HBO's Def Comedy Jam changed the landscape of comedy forever. Currently, Mr. Sumner is an executive partner in his venture, Laugh Mob, which has produced specials that have aired on Showtime and Urban Magic Johnson's Inspired Television Network. He has his own podcast. He's also the curator of comedy at the Apollo Theater in Harlem, New York. Mr. Sumner is joining us today to discuss the legacy of Def Comedy Jam, what he's doing now with Laugh Mob, and the historical significance of black comedy in America. Let's begin our conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to introduce a man who needs no introduction. His credits are too long to list. He's done the impossible time after time. He hails out of the great state of New Jersey. He's the man behind HBO's Def Comedy Jam, The Laugh Mob, comedy at the legendary Apollo Theater in Harlem, and many other ventures. Without this man, we may not know the kings of comedy. We may not know the names Dave Chappelle, Martin Lawrence, Steve Harvey, Chris Rock, Adele Givens, Cheryl Underwood, Kevin Hart, and countless other comedian icons. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together and show your love for the one and only Bob Sumner.
What's going on, fam? How you doing? What's happening?
Mr. Sumner, thank you so much for joining me today. So, I'm not going to lie, I tried to do my Steve Harvey impersonation just now. So, how did I do?
You were great. I was kind of like surprised because I didn't know that it was going to be such a, you was going to kill the game like you just did. You know, I was like, damn, all right. So, here I am.
Here I am, and
I'm ready to rock and soul, as they say.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for joining me today. Again, as I said, this is really an honor and a privilege to have you here. I've been looking forward to this interview ever since we first connected and, you know, agreed to set this up. So I want to start by showing you something real quick. Let me share my screen, and listeners who are listening to the podcast, I'll tell you just a second what you are going to be listening to. You've not had a chance to see Def Comedy Jam 25, I definitely recommend that as appointment viewing the next time you're free. So, Mr. Sumner, in the special, the host, Dave Chappelle, Steve Harvey, and others, you know, they recognize all of the people behind that historic and groundbreaking television series. And they start rolling off the names Russell Simmons, Stan Lathan. They show you sitting there in the audience looking dapper in your tuxedo.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. You're welcome. So who had the original idea for Def Comedy Jam?
You know, it's really funny because you hear so many different stories about how Def Comedy Jam came about. And all I can do is tell my story of how, you know, Def Comedy Jam came about. And it goes a little further than August the 5th, 1991. Okay. And the reason I say August the 5th, 1991, that's when I actually went to do my first, I guess you could say, pre-production, play that role to start prepping for a show that was soon to become iconic.
Okay.
I went to Atlanta for a, I was working for the record company, Def Jam Recordings, and we're getting ready to start Def Comedy Jam. So I kind of went down there multitasking, working for the label, but also prepping for, you know, Def Comedy Jam. And I went over to a place called the Comedy Act Theater, which they had one in Los Angeles, but they also had a satellite club in Atlanta. And a young man by the name of Bernie Mac was performing. He was like a headliner there coming out of Chicago. And I had heard about Bernie through Adele Givens, who had come to New York to work some clubs and stuff. Prior, all this is before Def Comedy Jam,
okay.
You know? But while I'm working at Def Jam Recordings, I was also moonlighting like on the underground in Jersey doing this comedy thing. You know, I started at a room called Terminal D in North New Jersey, where I also served as the first Kid Capri, so to speak. I was, you know, a DJ who was, you know, also adding the element of, you know, what that was all about to this urban, black, whatever you want to call it, stand-up that nobody really knew what it was all about. So here I am building this thing since I first started in February 8th, 1985, first time I ever did any comedy shows, all right? And it led to, I'm sorry?
Hey, Mrs. Sumner, Terminal D, because, you know, when I was doing a little bit of background research on you, were you doing, was it like a jazz night?
Yeah, this is what I'm, so you're good with that. So we were doing jazz and comedy at this place, and the jazz was popping, and then the comedy was building. Then the comedy got to a point where, you know, it was like really, really moving, you know, strong. And, you know, I came into the place to try to, you know, give the place some flavor and give them something that they had never seen before. And just like clubs do, they didn't need me anymore. The writing was on the wall. You know what I'm saying? But here I had a passion for what I was into trying to build, along with my partner, who was a musician, Rocky Bryant. He's now on he's on Broadway with the musical Tina, as well as he's the drummer for the Average White Band. We was two youngins out of the class of 79 at Roselle High School with a dream, you know? So the dream started there, and I thank Terminal D for allowing me to get started. But at the same time, I also saw how the business go. So lo and behold, I met this guy, Eric Livesey, who I had knew through, you know, my DJ years, and he was working at a club called Club 88, and there was a general manager there named Billy Press, and he allowed me to come in there with open arms, and that's where I really was able to do it my way, and I brought a young man who was working at Terminal D. He had just left Rutgers University, he had just graduated from Rutgers, named Bill Bellamy. Wow. And Bill came and jumped on board with me, and we rode that out for a minute, and then we went to a place called the Peppermint, which if you saw the Def Jam 25, yeah, Tiffany had mentioned, you know, when she was talking to Cheryl and Adele and Melanie about the Peppermint. Yeah. So all of this was going on prior, I should say the Terminal D and Club 88 was going on prior to Def Comedy Jam. And the funny thing about Club 88 was the day before Def Comedy Jam premiered on HBO was the last night I had been at Club 88. We had a big party with Kid Capri and everything. And then I moved to a place, to the Peppermint. So all of that come all together.
In terms of location, Terminal D, the Peppermint, Club 88, all of those are spots in New Jersey, correct?
All in Essex County, miles away from each other. And, you know, in that same area, Lauryn Hill, Queen Latifah, yeah. Faith Evans, you know, they all grew up in that same area. Whitney Houston, you know, so it's a lot of strong entertainment folks, you know, from there. But again, Stan and Russell in, I guess, 1990, I guess, I'm working at Def Jam. They were going into business, working in, you know, television. They was trying to expand, and they were doing different things. So then they had a comedy bug, and Carmen Ashers, who was the president there, she let them know that, yo, I might be the guy that can help them get there. And lo and behold, I think I did. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Well, so, what was your job at Def Jam prior to doing the show?
I was assistant to the president of Def Jam Recordings, which means that I know the ins and outs of every department at a record company. And, you know, at the time, we was like the creme de la creme of hip-hop. You know what I'm saying? So,
did your parents or your siblings or family members, did they have a background in terms of doing comedy or jazz or event planning? Like, how did you get that bug?
Yeah, well, the bug started out, I mean, it's really... Every time I do these interviews, people are really like, kind of like, really? And, you know, I'm at the Apollo Theater now as curator of comedy. And we actually, April 2nd, we have a special that I just finished doing, talking about, you know, comedy at the Apollo. And it's so funny for me because that's where it really all started for me. That's where the bug started as a 4 or 5 year old, okay? Because I would go to the Apollo Theater with my parents to see the Sunday matinees, or I would be there on Wednesdays at amateur night. And, you know, every week there was always a new musical act coming in, whether it was the Motown Review or if it was the James Brown Review. I saw them all. I saw David Ruffin 5 times at least. Wow. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So along with that, you always had the comedian that opened up the show along with the movie with Reuben Phillips and his orchestra. You can see him through the sheer curtain as the movie is ending, and then you have the comedian come on. And it could be anybody from a young Richard Pryor to a Nipsey Russell, Slappy White, Pygmy Markham, and most definitely Jackie Moms Mabel. I used to see Moms all the time, and I actually had the pleasure to present her into the Apollo Walk of Fame as one of the first 3 non-musical performers. Along with Richard Pryor and Red Fox.
Hey, so, Mr. Sumner, can you tell the listeners who might be too young to know Moms Mabley, just in like a brief minute, like,
well,
who she
was?
The
whole thing about, I could go on and on about Moms Mabley because there hasn't been a lady, there has not been a lady to take over her reign yet. That's a trip, because every time you hear about who's the next one, it's like Moms Mabley's name always come up. And if you don't know who she is, you know, we do have Google now. It's not just about Britannica, you know what I'm saying? So Moms Mabley is like, she's in my top 5, no matter who you want to put up there with her. You know, she was all about, she was a storyteller. That was the beauty of it. She was a real stand-up comedian, you know? So along with that, my parents would come there because my uncle is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was the lead singer for the Platters, who, you know, they're very well renowned. And he was the lead singer. He sang songs like Only You and Smoke It In Your Eyes and Great Pretender and all that. His name's Tony Williams. So that kind of led me into being in the entertainment business, as well as my mom worked at RCA Records, where she was in the royalty department. So if you saw the movie One Night in Miami, and they was talking about Sam Cooke and his royalties and all that, my mom actually dealt with Mr. Cooke's royalties as well as Elvis Presley's. So I've been in this industry for a long time, just watching, being a fly on the wall, you know what I mean? Being a sponge. And it's gotten me to be where I'm at now.
Wow. Wow.
Straight
wow.
out of Roselle. Straight out of Roselle.
straight out of Roselle. Roselle's finest.
That's right.
Okay. So now we get to bring it back to HBO's Def Comedy Jam. I've been binge watching the series since the pandemic started. So that's been my Friday night fix. Like every
and that's
Friday
on Kevin
night.
Hart's? On Kevin Hart's?
No. So I have it on Amazon. Amazon
okay.
Prime. Yeah,
we're
so
all
I bet.
Over the place. So yeah. I might get a check from somewhere.
Hopefully, because you know, you guys are on Amazon Prime. I saw that you just got added to Peacock, which is NBC's new streaming service. And I guess you're on Kevin Hart too. So yeah, you guys are all over the place.
Yeah, that's good to know because I have to make some calls. Okay.
So you know, I've been binge watching it every Friday just about, and I'm up to season 4 now. Where
wow.
You know, Joe Torre is taking over for Martin Lawrence as the host. And you know, so I have a bunch of Def Jam related questions. And
come on, man, bring them.
Yeah, I'm just gonna bring them. So I'm gonna call these mini questions. I'm just gonna throw out real fast, and then you can answer. Number one, where was the show filmed in New York? Two, how did you go about selecting the comics and the dancers, as well as Kid Capri, to do the show? And then I'm gonna stop with this third one for now. I noticed in the first 2 or 3 seasons, there were always these A-list celebrities in the audience that Martin would recognize as the start of the show. And I wanted to know how they ended up coming there. Did you invite them? Did Martin invite them? So let's
okay,
start with that.
Okay, so why don't you done ran 5 questions at me, and my memory only remembers, I don't even know which one it was.
Okay.
All right, so you got it in order, so you want to know where did we shoot,
yes,
okay?
Sir.
A lot of people had the misconception that we were at the Apollo Theater, where we wasn't. We were actually at the Academy Theater at Times Square, 43rd Street, directly across from the New York Times building, the old New York Times. And when I tell you that the line used to be wrapped all the way from 43rd to 42nd, all the way down 8th. Yeah, it was ridiculous. So that's where we used to shoot. And in terms of where did I select the comedians from, you know, when I first started doing the show, I had already had relationships with a lot of comedians from, you know, my underground comedy days, as well as, you know, quite a few of them used to tape It's Showtime at the Apollo. That was really the only place to, you know, for African-American comedians to be seen. And so that's how it went down. But I still have a formula that I treat my selections of comedians no different than the NFL or NBA draft. I have, you know, everyone knows that I love sports. And that's how I pretty much break it down. And, you know, from city to city, you don't have to come to LA or New York. I'll go to Augusta, Georgia. You know what I mean? I'll go to Memphis, Tennessee. And that's just how it went down. In terms of the selection of the dancers, that came from a whole nother audition process that we went through. And of course, Stan Lathan, who was the incredible director, who has been killing the game with, you know, doing all of Chappelle's work now. He would, along with this young lady, Kristen, who was working in my office, and then there's Twinkie Bird. Twinkie played a major part. You know, Twinkie's a big time casting agent now out in LA as well as producer. So that's where the dancers came from. And then in terms of the audience and the celebrities, I mean, that was all about New York City. It was all about Def Jam and Rush and Russell's relationships. And if you ever been to the Peppermint, my spot out in Jersey, they all would be there, the Knicks, the Nets, the Giants, the Jets. So, you know, that was a easy play. After a while, you know, at first we couldn't get nobody to come to the show because nobody knew what it was. And then after a while, we had to, like, pick and choose who sat where. You know, we had, I don't know if you saw that one show with the whole Wu-Tang Clan sitting in one area. Nobody really knew who they were. No one knew who Biggie was, but they were all there with us, rocking with us.
It's funny you mentioned that because there was one episode I was watching where Martin shouts out Tretch, the lead rapper from Naughty by Nature, and I could have sworn sitting right to the side of Tretch was a young Sean Diddy Combs who was going by Puff Daddy back then. And no, like he didn't get recognized. And I saw Martin, there was another time he did that where he shouted out Spike Lee. And sitting next to Spike was right, Sanaa Lathan. I'm like, oh, there's Sanaa, but I'm guessing maybe she wasn't known then.
No, at that time, that was the director's daughter.
Yeah, okay.
With a prime seat. You know what I'm saying? Right. Puff is family. Steve, we're all, Naughty is like my nephews. Okay. You know what I'm saying? So we're all, you would come to the Peppermint, and you're liable to see, I thought that they would do the Wendy Williams, would do a piece of her being at the Peppermint. Because these would be some wild nights. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. Wow.
And how did Kid Capri end up on the show?
Well, Kid Capri ended up on the show very simply. I pretty much told you earlier that when I started doing stand-up comedy shows in North New Jersey, I brought in the element of the DJ. Because I was a DJ, I had records from my mother's job at RCA, as well as, you know, I'm now working at Def Jam Records. So instead of having in the comedy club the piano player, or the drum with the snare and all of that, I said I'm gonna play some music on and off for the comedians, and it became something that was like really, really hot. You had some people that started. Bringing in cassette tapes and stuff, but that wasn't what it was all about. It was about the flavor. Yeah. So from Terminal D to Club 88, that was the move. So when I started doing a Def Comedy Jam, we knew that we wanted to bring a DJ element in, but we were also talking about bringing in an announcer as well, you know, the voice of God. Okay. And one night, I'm at the Madison Square Garden for the Budweiser Superfest. They used to have these concerts. I don't know if you're familiar with it, all right? But at the Superfest, it would have all these different groups. It's just like how Hot 97 do some of their stuff, summer jams and all that. But Alan Heyman was like ahead of his time with this, right? And this is when Babyface had This Is For The Cool, right? And LL, Todd had Mama Said Knock You Out. Right? So the show was banging, and then the after party was on the West Side Highway. This is right before, this is during the time when we're still trying to put this whole Def Comedy Jam thing together. And, you know, even with Robin Harris, now, you know, he's passed away, you know, we're still trying to figure out even that part. You know, who's going to host this thing, you know? But that particular night, I definitely found our DJ that was going to be Kid Capri, because Kid Capri was in this piece doing everything. He was talking on the mic, he was playing all these joints, and the next thing I know, every damn comedy show now need a Kid Capri. You know, it's really crazy how that whole thing goes.
Yeah. Was Martin Lawrence always going to be the host for the show, or were other people in consideration?
I would like to say that Martin was going to be in consideration, you know, at some point. I'm just trying to figure out what had happened. Okay, here we go. Martin was on a show uptown, and it was like a tribute. I believe it was a tribute to Robin, but I do know that Martin was just another one on the show. This is when In Living Color was hot.
Yeah.
Right? When the Living Color was hot, you had all of those guys with stand-ups. Tommy, David, Damon, they were all stand-ups. And then you had Paul Mooney, who everybody knew. You know, Ken Wayans, everybody was on this show, but there was also Martin Lawrence. Okay? And Martin Lawrence gave everything that we wanted Def Comedy Jam to be. All right? So, of course, the call goes back to Russell and Stan. All right? Yo, this dude, Martin Lawrence, could be the one. But, you know, of course, they have to do due diligence, right? They reach out to Eddie Arsenio. Stamp of approval. That's who it's going to be. Reach out to HBO. HBO was already looking to do something with Martin. You know, Martin had already had a special. A lot of people don't know. Martin had had a 30-minute special, or hour special on HBO. So he was like the perfect candidate because his manager, Topa Carew, who's a great man, was trying to make moves for him. And, I mean, the rest is history. Kid Capri and Martin Lawrence. I mean, hey.
Yeah, that was perfect. That chemistry between Kid and Martin was perfect. Did you guys always kind of know though in the back of your mind that Martin was so hot that he was probably going to eventually leave the show and you were going to have to get a new host?
Let me tell you something. I was happy that Martin stayed as long as he did. You know what I mean? Because after that first season, because that first season went longer than one season. Like, I kind of, like, shot two seasons within one. Because when you look at it, you know, a lot of people don't realize that Bernie Mac doubled up. You know, the first time you saw Bernie, he was stirring it like coffee.
Yeah.
And then when he came back, he wasn't scared of them.
Right, yeah.
I mean, and in the meantime, Chris Tucker wasn't there at the beginning.
Okay.
I brought Chris in during the second taping of kind of like the first season.
Okay.
You know, it was a weird situation, but Martin was there for all of that, you know, and thank God Martin was there to find Hustle Man. You see what was going on with Def Comedy Jam? You know, we were actually giving comedians opportunities to move into other things. Where do you think Steve Harvey and Cedric's tandem come from?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where do you think the Hughleys come from?
Yeah.
You know, it's like so weird how all of that went down. A lot of people don't know that Craig Robinson's first time on television was with us. Ricky Smiley's first time, you know, you got to remember, they would see them on Comic View every night. That was a week, you know, a nightly show, daily show, where Def Comedy Jam only came, you know, once a week. So a lot of people you'll see on Comic View after Def Comedy Jam had been on the air for, what, 2 years,
yeah,
so to speak. You know, some people think those people come from there, but a lot of them started with us.
Is it hyperbole to say that the show not only provided a platform for urban Black America to tell a story through comedy, but it also transformed the business of comedy for the next three decades by introducing the mainstream to all of those comics you just mentioned, not to mention people like Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle?
Well, Chris had already been popular, but with the success of Def Comedy Jam, it just showed you how dope Chris really was.
Okay.
No different than Bernie. When Bernie did Def Comedy Jam, he had already been in the game. You know what I'm saying? So you could see the evolution of the whole scope. And that's why I feel like, and again, the way I do my draft and this, that, and the other, I'm prepared. And my new thing is hashtag 21 is 91. You know, with this pandemic and everything, I'm going back to basics. I'm prepared to introduce to America and the world the same type of vibe that I did then. You know, I have a podcast that I'm getting ready to do, should be within the next month. And we're going to have discussions about a lot of that stuff. But this is one tag that I had put together, and it fits in with what you're saying right now, Josh, is I've had the pleasure to play a very significant role in the creation of a groundbreaking stand-up comedy show that helped change lives and the color of comedy forever. That's real talk. I saw that happen. I see what Netflix is doing right now with Netflix is a joke. Look at all of the comedians who they are spotlighting. Half of those comedians I had on Def Comedy Jam in the 90s. You heard me? That's why I'm saying it's things going on. You know, we're launching the American Black Film Festival. You heard of the American Black Film Festival, right?
Yes, sir.
You know, my partner Jeff Friday introduced the ABFF to America to be what Sundance is, but for black and brown, you know? And that's what we're getting ready to do. We're getting ready to do the same thing with the ABFF Comedy Festival. You know, the Comedy Festival, we're gonna try to introduce the world to comedians that don't get the opportunity to go to Just for Laughs in Miami, in Montreal. You know what I'm saying? And again, a lot of those comedians who make it to those places, I saw them 10 years ago. Real talk. You know?
How hard was it for these comics to get that record? Let's go back to 91. How hard was it for these comics to actually get the mainstream recognition? Because you did have Showtime at the Apollo, you know, and people could be seen on that show. And I know BET's Comic View comes, I think, a few months after Def Jam came on HBO. So how hard was it to be a Chris Tucker or one of these underground comics at that time if you wanted the mainstream to know you?
Well, let me just say this to you. Comic View actually came a little bit after, more than a couple months, because they had their first host, I believe, was DL. And then they started having the contest for who the next host would be. And that's how it became Cedric and DC Carey and some more. Those things were based on contests at first. Oh. You know, it was like a whole nother type of operation that you would see on Def Jam. And let me give it to you, and I got this answer for you. Those comedians that you saw on Def Comedy Jam, most of them you never saw on Comic View. Okay? The reason being, I wasn't looking for comedians who were just funny. I was looking for comedians who could make a difference, who could become movie stars, television stars. I don't know, do the math, look back at it, okay? That's how it went down. So, you know, when Chris Tucker did Def Comedy Jam and you hear Ice Cube talking about it, that's when he first saw him. Then he was in what? Money Talks, First, Fifth Element, all that type of stuff. You know, I mean, that's just how we played it. Even when you looked at when House Party came back, most of those comedians came from Def Comedy Jam. And I can tell you this, and this is real talk. Def Comedy Jam aired on Friday night at midnight, okay? It would re-air on Saturday a little later, right? Every week. On Monday and Tuesday, my phones were ringing off the hook from Hollywood and New York casting agents because they were looking, wanting to know how can they get in touch with so-and-so who they saw last night or the other night on Def Comedy Jam. That's how that thing went. Wow. And the reason it stopped is because everybody got comfortable after 5-6 years. You know how you get used to something, and then when it's not there anymore, you miss it, and then it comes back. Because when it came back, in the 2000s, mid-2000s, I had Damon Wayans Jr. on the show, if you recall.
So you were still behind the show when they had the reboot.
You know, people didn't know who he was, and I had Tiffany Haddish, okay? That was in 2007. You didn't recognize who she was till Girls Trip. How crazy is that?
Kevin Hart was on it too, right?
But Kevin Hart, actually, those years, that we wasn't on, like 97, 98, 99, I call them right after we moved to LA, okay, type thing, right? Kevin Hart, D-Ray Davis, Coca Brown, they all won Def Comedy Jam contests. We were still on the road touring till 2000. I could have put those guys and girls on in 97, 98, you would have knew who they were before Soul Plane and all of that. This is what I'm saying. Def Comedy Jam was like a machine. It was like a farm system for the stars, and that's why I created Laugh Mob, you know, because I want to do this thing again, because I know it can be done again, and the acronym for MOB is More of Bob's Best. It's as simple as that, you know?
So Laugh Mob is the new venture, which is building off that old legacy from back in 91.
That about it. It's my baby, man. Def Comedy Jam was my baby. You saw the Def Jam 25.
Yes, sir.
A lot of things wasn't said. A lot of things wasn't said. And just for some clarity, at the beginning of the show, Chappelle said I passed on him 3 times. I don't know if you saw that, but
I remember that.
And Dave
yeah.
was just yeah. joking. Yeah. Dave was, but he was joking, and some people actually said, Bob, you passed on Dave Chappelle 3 times. No, I put David on when he was 18. You heard me? Come on now.
Was he known? Yeah. Was he known prior to coming on the show?
No, not really. Not really. Dave's only thing, I mean, Dave had did like Star Search and all those type of things, but nobody really was paying attention to much of anybody until, you know, until Def Jam. Def Jam was definitely a spotlight for a lot of them. And it wasn't, but for them, all I looked for was 7 minutes of stand-up when I was traveling. I didn't care about if they had an hour, you know, and even, but I did need 20 minutes if I was gonna put you on tour. You know, if I was gonna make you part of the tour, I needed you to give me more than what you gave me on television.
Okay, right, so with the tour, because most people don't know that. We know the TV show that came on Friday night, but then there was a Def Jam tour that was happening throughout the year besides the show.
Yes. Yeah, what happened with that was, I mean, we came out of the gate like rock stars, you know, and it was like only right for us to take it on the road. You know, people wanted to see us up close and personal all over the country, all over the world, right? But there was one problem. Martin was going out by himself. You know, Martin had his own thing going on, and they wanted to see the Def Comedy Jam with Martin, so to speak. I said, I got something for him. Of course, Kid Capri's coming, so that's going to be a party. And, you know, from Kid blowing up our tour, he started going on the road with Bad Boy, New Edition, everybody, Mary, opening up their shows like he would open up our shows. Okay, it wasn't just a New York thing. So we had that down, and I already knew, you know, there were some comedians that I knew who could deliver, who the people wanted to see, like Bill Bellamy and Adele Gibbons, right? But there was a guy named Bernie Mac. I already knew that if Martin was gonna go do his own thing, Bernie could handle it. And Bernie handled it. When I say he handled it, it got to a point where they started wanting Bernie to come back by himself. So now that's what I had. I had to start making all different types of things happen. On New Year's Eve, I had 4 Def Comedy Jam shows going on in 4 different cities all over the country. You heard? Different hosts, different DJs. You know, with Def Jam, we give you Lil Bug Starsky, we give you Richie Rich, we give you Jazzy Jeff with Kid Capri in Chicago. It was like that, fam.
Wow, that's crazy. You know, I was reading Russell Simmons' biography. I think it came out back in 02 or 03. And he was talking about the show. And he said, one, that he didn't consider it a hip-hop show, which was surprising to me because I always associated it, the show, with hip-hop. But he said, like, a lot of the, in his opinion, a lot of the comics weren't really in that hip-hop demographic, and even though a lot of the audience was hip-hop, later on more of the audience were older, like, you know, people who you know, were church-going folk and, you know, weren't really into the hip-hop music and the culture like that.
It was such a misconception of what the show was all about. What people didn't understand was we gave comedians an opportunity to do their nightclub act on TV. You know, if it was kind of blue, so be it. But we had all different types of comedians on the show, and it wasn't like Cedric was up there cussing up a storm, or we had Warren Hutchison, Craig Robinson. These guys wasn't cussing. Jonathan Slocum, who was like one of the dopest faith-based comedians. However, we also had Paul Mooney. I had Dolemite. Rudy Ray Moore did Def Comedy Jam. You know what I'm saying? Wildman Steve did Def Comedy Jam. So there was definitely... They wasn't hip-hop, or were they hip-hop? You see what I'm saying? It goes a lot of different ways in terms of how that show was portrayed. However, you know, you take a young Tracy Morgan, a young Chris Tucker, a young Dave Chappelle, yeah, you might consider that to be hip-hop, but J.B. Smoove was J.B. Smoove. Bill Bellamy was definitely, you know, Bill was clean as the board of hell. Bill was wearing suits before the Kings of Comedy. You know what I'm saying?
So you would say it would be wrong to mislabel it or to just simply classify it as a hip-hop show?
Yeah, I mean, of course, they're going to call it's called Def Jam.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, we even became like, you know how you call, no matter what the cola is, it's still give me a Coke?
Yes, sir.
That's the same thing with Def Jam. Now everybody's labeled a Def Jam comic. I'm like, come on now. What makes a Def Jam comic? I know what makes a Def Jam comic because I'm the one that, you know, initially put them on. But I don't consider it to be a Def Jam comic. Just like you see all these shows, so-and-so comedy jam, so-and-so comedy jam. If you knew how we came up with that word, Def Comedy Jam, it would bug you out. All of a sudden, it's like, that's the go-to word, comedy jam.
How did you come up with the term?
Sitting in the conference room at Def Jam Records. We're having a pre-production meeting. You know, this is before I even went out on the road. We're trying to figure out what are we gonna call the name of the show. And you ever see that episode of Chappelle when they be passing the word, I ain't the N-word around?
Yeah, yeah.
That's how it went with this. We're just trying to figure out what we're gonna call this, right? Now, in our Def Jam office, up on the wall was nothing but platinum plaques, right? So as we're trying to figure it out, Russell leans back in his chair, back against the wall, and the plaque falls down, right? The plaque falls down, Russell picks up the plaque and looks at it, and Russell goes, Def Comedy Jam.
Oh, wow.
That was it.
Okay.
Everybody was, Def Comedy Jam, Def Comedy Jam, Def Comedy Jam. That was it.
Oh, wow.
Simple as that. Now you hear Tom and Jerry's Comedy Jam. You know, everybody's chicken, you know, the Muffler King Comedy Jam. Everything's Comedy Jam. But it started with something that simple.
Wow. Wow. So, are you familiar with the Robert Towson documentary, Why We Laugh?
I'm on there.
Oh, you're on there. Okay. So I'm bringing this up because I kind of felt, when I watched that show, that it took somewhat of a slight towards Def Jam. And the reason I say that is because, you know, you watch the whole show, and I've showed it in my Black History classes to my students to teach them a little bit about the history of comedy in Black America. And you know, you watch the show and they give you all of these stories of how we've overcome, you know, and how comedy has evolved over the years. And then as you start getting into 60s, 70s, you hear, you know, Bill Cosby, and he celebrated, Pryor celebrated. You know, we get into the 80s with Whoopi Goldberg, Eddie Murphy. And then it's like we get around into the 90s and there's a 3-minute segment where they talk about certain comics who brought the culture down. And it talked about them in a way as though they were the cousin you don't invite to the cookout.
because they're going
to
shame.
You want me to speak to that?
Hold on, Mr. Sumner. You know, they're going to shame the family, right? And then, you know, I'm watching the CNN docuseries, The History of Comedy, that came out, I think, 2 years ago. And they had, like, all of these episodes about, you know, comedy and how it's evolved. And most of it is focused on white humor. But there's one episode about race and black comics. And, you know, again, I'm watching it, this hour-long episode, and I don't hear Def Jam mentioned. I don't see any Def Jam comics at all. There was another episode about carnal humor, like sexual humor, where they did have Monique and some more, and they talked about the Queens of Comedy tour. But that was the only mention of anything related to Def Comedy Jam. And I just feel like the show never got any respect, you know, up until the 25th anniversary a few years ago. So please speak to the controversy.
Well, it's no controversy. It's none. It spoke for itself on that Def Jam 25. And everybody knows, you know, what Def Comedy Jam meant to us. You know, it's as simple as that. In that documentary that you're talking about, I mentioned something, and I'm gonna tell you what it was, and it goes to, as that show was ending, it ended because at that time, Cat Williams was hot, okay?
Okay.
It always dealt with individual comedians. Def Comedy Jam wasn't about individuals. I made 25 millionaires. Or we made 25 million ads out of that show. People were still eating off that show. So people could say what they want, especially the man who's locked up right now. You know, he ate us up. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't even entertain any of that. You know? So what I wanted to say was this, though. What I said on Why We Laugh was, in the 70s, you had a basketball phenom named Julius Erving. He called him Dr. J, right? When he retired from the game, everybody was wondering, could you ever see another Dr. J? This is real talk, all right? At that same time, there was a phenomenal comedian by the name of Richard Pryor, okay? Dr. J and Richard Pryor, they was the toast of the 70s. Trust me when I tell you this, right? As we moved into the 80s, you had Michael Jordan. Oh, wow. Wow, the next Dr. J. Then we have Eddie Murphy. Okay? Here we are, one at a time, they're being replaced. Okay? What happens in the 90s? A phenom comes. Def Comedy Jam. What the heck? It's a bunch of them. It's more than just two of them. It's more than just the guys from In Living Color. Look at this. What's going on? Right? They're cursing. They're doing this, that, and the other. The thing was, it wasn't just one guy doing their HBO special. It was four people on there. If four of them, so two of them are using profanity, it's making you feel like the show is whatever it was. But remember, they're doing their nightclub acts. You know, and then at the same time, you have not just the Chicago Bulls, but you have Barkley, you have Ewing, you have Olajuwon. That's what Def Comedy Jam was. So for anybody that don't want to give us any respect on it, have you seen any more superstars since besides Kev or anybody? The missing ingredient is we need a show like Def Comedy Jam. Now, other people have tried. You know, I even worked on a couple that tried, but I didn't have the hands-on like I had with Def Comedy Jam, you know, and that's why I created Laugh Mob, so we can really try to figure it out. Kid Capri and I, before the pandemic, we was working on something to try to bring stand-up back to New York City, and as you already saw, you know, my Laugh Mob laugh tracks, that's a whole nother take on stand-up comedy, you know, but that whole thing of giving comedians an opportunity to showcase and become that next one, I really think that's what we're gonna do with this ABFF Comedy Fest, because I really see that it can be done again, and all I need is the opportunity. You know what I mean?
Who are some of the names with Laugh Mob that we need to be aware of?
Well, in terms of like, all I'm doing right now is working as a production company. Okay. You know, in terms of the management and everything, we'll see what that is when Jeff and I talk about what we're doing over there with the fest. But in terms of who I have my eyes on and this, that, and the other, you know, through my podcast that I'm doing, which is called Kicking It with Bob Sumner, that's going to be a combination of me going down memory lane with a lot of the comedians who, you know, came through that Def Jam tree. And then I have a segment which is going to be, I got my eyes on you. You know, and some of those comedians, I mean, there's one right off the top, Marshall Brandon, who I talk about all the time. He's like a cross between Bernie and Robin Harris. When I tell you, that's the real. He's been on the road with Donnell Rollins doing a lot of work. And then there's a Brandon Hot Sauce Glover, who I really like his. He's very animated. He takes you back to those early Def Jam years. And then there's Timmy Hall, who's a retired Baltimore policeman, who, when I tell you, like, he's now ready for the big time. You know, those are three right out of my head guys. But women are reigning supreme right now in stand-up. Yeah. I mean, I have to tell you that in terms of what I see out there, it's some funny, funny women led by this young lady, Rita Brett, out of Jackson, Mississippi. She's been working with Ricky Smiley, who's another one of my guys from back in the day who a lot of people, you know, don't realize. But Ty Davis, who won the, we do a Comedy Wings competition at the American Black Film Festival in Miami. She was a winner, you know. There's a young lady named Stiletto out of Baltimore. Baltimore got some fire down there, I'm trying to tell you. And then there's two who've been around, but they haven't really made it to that next level yet, but I know that they have the goods, just like Bernie and them had that experience, but it was time for them. And that's a young lady by the name of Mugga out of New York City. Mugga, and then there's another one out of Baltimore named Michelle, who they call her the indie mom of comedy. She's really polished, you know, because stand-up ain't all about being all up in your face. It's about being able to tell great stories and having a point of view. You know what I mean? And that's where I'm at these days.
I'm so glad that you mentioned all of those female comics, because that was one of the beauties of Def Comedy Jam, was the fact that it gave so many women a platform to tell their stories back then when, you know, they weren't getting it. So thank you so much for what you did then and what you're doing now for the female comics.
But we're kicking off Laugh Mob's On Campus Comedy Jam. I'm going to use the Comedy Jam name, all right? And we're doing Laugh Mob's On Campus Comedy Jam. So if you know of any schools that might be interested and didn't, you know, and it's going to be catered to what the school want, you know what I mean? And we're going to do that. I also, before the pandemic, I was getting ready to kick off Bob Sumner's Laugh Mob.
And that's our show for the week. Special thanks to today's guest, Mr. Bob Sumner. And thank you, the listening audience. We apologize for the technical difficulties. Unfortunately, Mr. Sumner's interview got cut off just before the end. But we do thank him again for all of his time and hope that you enjoy the conversation. If you like what you heard, please check out future episodes. A special shout out, as always, to Uncle Phil and Viv. Have a blessed day.